It's Ken Stauer, station manager again, just to advise that we now sit at 91% of our goal of reaching that $100,000 mark for the Sound of Your City fundraising campaign, thanks to everyone that has made a financial contribution, tax deductible, by the way. If you have not done so, please help us to build on those digits and get to the 100% mark by the end of December 31st. Go to CIUT.FM and make your contribution today. It's that simple. CIUT.FM.
From the roots up, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
And welcome to Taylor Report. This is Phil Taylor, or what remains of him since I had a bad told, T-O-L-D, recovering. And with me is Phil Conlon, a familiar voice from Critic Circle, but Classical Underground, Wednesday, 6 to 8 p.m. How are you doing, Phil?
I'm doing good. I've been fortunate. I haven't had a cold.
Just hang around,
I'm sure.
Your luck will improve.
Of course.
I don't recommend it. But, hey, here we are. It's approaching the time of Mary and Joseph. As you know, they're looking for a place to stay. And we couldn't, the Christian world and all those who, including Islam, which accept the story, and to whom is very important, Our thoughts turn to Mary and Joseph, who apparently are not only are they looking for a place, but it's a fairly hostile environment.
Yeah, they're looking for a place where they're not going to have bombs dropped on their heads.
Yes.
It's not only that there's no room in the inn, there's no inn, there's a stable out there where the animals are kept, but we're going to bomb it, so don't go there.
We're moving the inn. Yeah. We've just decided. Population transfer. So this is a nasty situation, actually. By the way, I'm going to trap Riley here. Riley Moorman, who's a genius, has a show on Monday morning at 9 and holds the station. He's one of the pieces that holds the station together. Little secret, let's let you know. But if you could join us, you've been to some of the demonstrations recently.
Yes, I have.
And you must be impressed. The weather is not exactly great, but the demonstrations, to my knowledge, I'm talking to Paul Riley while he's looking for a headset. It's a nice trick, huh? And then he says, "What was the mystery question?" And then I make him guess. Now, these demonstrations have really. The weather's gotten rougher, the police have gotten tougher, and there's kind of a cloud hanging over that you can tell the mood in certain circles of the power and in Canada, like in Germany and in France and England. They're tempted to even arrest people. In the last demonstration you attended, a guy was arrested.
Yeah, this was, I think
what was that like?
It was about a week ago at the police station. It was absolutely horrific. I don't know if you've seen the videos of it.
No, I didn't see, but when you say police station, there wasn't the arrest. Where were you? Weren't you in front of the U.S. consulate?
Yeah, it's just down the street from each other.
Uh-huh. So it's, how appropriate.
Yeah, precisely. Unfortunately, yeah. No, I don't know if you've seen the videos, but the guy had his neck kneeled on. And then
kneeled on. By the way, are you a witness? You saw?
Oh yeah, there's video evidence. Like, it was horrific. And then the police very quickly formed a barricade around so that no more video evidence would ever be captured of the incident.
Now, that's so undemocratic, right? Untransparent. This is, we just have an expression, oh, that's third world conduct. It seems kind of first world. Did the individual end up injured, or has he made any, what is his status? Do you know?
I think he was injured during that, but I'm not fully sure. He's on what happened.
He's been released?
Next. Yes, he has been released after the...
But does he face charges?
Yeah, I think he still faces charges.
Yeah. Are you following demonstrations other than those here? I mean, I want to say I really admire you being there. But I'm impressed with how many demonstrations there are going on around the world week after week. Like yesterday, I saw that there was one in Oslo that they said was huge, the largest demonstration anybody had ever seen in Oslo.
Yeah, it's interesting. People aren't really getting bored with this whole war like the rest of them.
Yeah, I was reading Thomas Walkham, and he's a senior fellow and learned man at the Toronto Star. And the first paragraph was, "The world wants to forget about Palestine." How about that for... How does that jive with you, the reality you see?
I mean, it seems like some people would like the world to forget about Palestine, but it seems overwhelmingly like the world doesn't want to and isn't going to.
Yeah, you know, when he writes something like that, I think he must mean the editors. That, you know, there are editors who think they're so powerful. They say, we're not going to cover that story. You know, so-and-so is doing something. We're not going to cover that. And then they think, you see, little one, I'll make you go away. Except that they don't go away. That the demonstrations keep getting larger. But for myself, I just say that I've discovered that this guy, Fred Hahn, leader of CUPE, he's a remarkable guy. But I rely on him to tell me what to do on the weekend. Do you have, how about you yourself? If you want to know what's going to come up, for example, since you've been following the issue and have literally demonstrated, where do you go to?
I mean, there's always the strategy of just walking around and seeing where people are protesting, because there is so many protests. You can find one. But honestly, I just rely on social media and some of my better connected friends.
Yeah.
And it's just a group chat of, oh, they're going to show up here. I'm free. I'll also show up with them.
Isn't it? So you rely on like a social circle, somebody gives you a heads up.
Yeah.
There is a lot of creative activity.
Oh, there's a ton.
I'm very impressed, particularly the anti-military guys, the ones who show up at the places where they actually make weapons. And they close them, or at least they're at every gate. That's really remarkable. And now in New York, they're having these demonstrations, I think today, that they had one on the Brooklyn Bridge. They've done that. They did Grand Central Station. To me, this is all very poignant. I want to ask your opinion about this, too. It's bizarre that I'm reading, people are very concerned, you know, with the demonstrations, because there might be anti-Semitism. But the best demonstrations and the leading spokesperson and most of the events that I care about are led by Jewish organizations. I know it's not the ADL or whatever it is, but they are. And they're able to move thousands of people who risk their employment, you know, risk their PhDs, that sort of thing. I don't know if you have any impression of that. We're told that academia is endangered. Do you have the impression that universities might have to close down because students are scared? Do you have any idea like that?
I'm really not sure. It seems very, very multicultural, the backlash towards this conflict, if you could even call it that, which you probably shouldn't, because someone being beaten up on the ground isn't really a conflict. I don't know if it counts. But universities specifically, I know there's been talk of some campuses shutting down, but it seems pretty overwhelming that the vast majority of protests have been respectful and peaceful.
Yeah, not only peaceful, but I think believers in equality of peoples and multiculturalism and whatnot, why aren't they journalists all excited about the fact that these are very multicultural, multi-ethnic, multi-religious events? You'd think they'd say, you know, that's pretty nice. Because something like this war happens, you can expect the ethnic groups to go after each other. That would be predictable. A child could predict these people might fight each other. And indeed, in World War I, man, they did fight each other. But I don't see any celebration of the fact that actually, you know, our best spokesperson seems to come from every community. It's not one. Absolutely remarkable. Do you have any anticipation? Do you know what's kind of being talked about for the coming weeks in terms of protests here and that kind of thing? Do you have any idea?
I don't know. I'm leaving back to my hometown of Calgary. Yeah, shortly. So I'm not entirely sure what's going on in the next few weeks, but I can't imagine they'll abate very much.
That is going to be interesting. We're going to get a Calgary report.
Yeah, are they demonstrating in Calgary?
They actually are, yeah.
Excellent.
No, I knew there were big ones. Actually, I don't know a city in Canada that didn't get involved in the early going. Of course, it has to flatten out in the sense it depends on the issue, how big a disaster, state of the war, state of the peace talks. Did I say peace talks? There's a joke. It's going to be great. You'll be off to Calgary, come back in the new year. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
So, Roddy, we're going to be really interested. So please take a notepad and record voices if you feel like it.
Will do.
And create a whole, actually, you want to make it up. It all suits me. anyway, Roddy, thanks very much. We do appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
I hope, Phil, you and I, you know, find ourselves at more of these. If I get my, I want to be like Norman Mailer, get my Uggs. Do you know, Norman Mailer was addicted to Uggs.
Yes, he was.
You heard about that?
Yes.
You mean, buried in his Uggs. Yeah.
Do you know that the Wall Street Journal made a tremendous discovery the other day, and they put it on their front page? They said that the use of the word genocide is too much, and it's time to retire the term. That's what the Wall Street Journal says.
I've heard this.
Yes, that they the term.
The Washington Post.
Yeah, they didn't say retire the practice of genocide.
Maybe an early retirement.
Right. Yeah. Just retire the word.
Right? You know, with. Gold watch, thank you. Well, look, it's a fact that we've talked about it on the Taylor Report, because after all, the Taylor Report for the past 20 years has been talking about the International Criminal Tribunal for former Yugoslavia and Rwanda, where the word got beaten into a pulp to the point where Noam Chomsky, in an introduction to one of the last books by Edward Herman, said, look, the term is becoming useless. Now, by the way, it's not our fault. It's that everybody and his brother decided to drag in the word because it's kind of like once you start using it, it's like salt or something. You got to say, do you want salt? Yeah, I'd like more. And so they throw in more use of the term. And that's very unfortunate. What you have to talk about, in my opinion, is the crime. Our bombs, called dumb bombs, now they're calling them, they're saying, well, 40% of the bombs used, maybe more, are dumb. And what they mean by that is that the blasted thing, you drop it, and we're not quite sure where it's going to land. And yes, it will kill a bunch of people. But if you said that the people are no good in the first place, hey, who cares? That's where we've gotten. This is, whether you noticed it or not, the Taylor Report, CIET, 89.5 FM. I want to point out that pressure is growing. Of all things, the British foreign minister and the German foreign minister, neither of whom is worth 2 cents in my opinion, but they've been around a while. If you wear the hat and you've been around, you're famous and you're very important. So this guy It's David, isn't it?
Cameron.
David Cameron.
Yeah.
But I got his first name right.
You got his first name right.
Okay, David Cameron.
Yeah, he's the guy who...
he's calling for a durable ceasefire. Yeah. Now, Canada is calling for an undurable ceasefire, or, you know, a three-day thing with a pass and an option on a fourth. This is all having to do with the bloody ignorance and crazy military operations, I think, partly, of the most marvelous modern advanced army in the world, the Israeli army, where after a period of really, you know, our hearts kind of lifted up when there was an exchange of prisoners. And we saw these really nice people come walking out, saying hello to their relatives, patting their captor on the shoulder and saying goodbye. And we said, hey, now this is the way it ought to work. Instead, it became, when Canada talks, which is to say when the United States, Israel, and Canada talk, they say, well, okay, there should be, the prisoners have to be released, the hostages, pardon me, hostages. Well, okay, but you haven't said anything. And when somebody stands with a sign that says, release the hostages, okay, are you for an exchange? Let's just get down to business. You want an exchange of prisoners or not? Because if you're going to be Canada and stamp your foot and say, yes, we want a ceasefire, but the Hamas has to release the hostages, you say, well, you didn't say anything. You can just go to the back of the line. That is so ignorant. Why couldn't we have a mature leader who says, I understand these things are hard to do, and we would like to see them done, and we will help to see them done. But don't pretend that you can stamp your foot and say something like that, and anything's going to happen and that you and your cabinet are happy together. You have to exchange prisoners. Israel has prisoners. I don't care what they call them. They love to say they're terrorists. That's their business. Call them what you want. They're prisoners. The other guy says, I've got them too. So let's do some business. Let's trade. Netanyahu went to high school in New Jersey. You think he'd understand this? Because he talks like a Jersey guy. You know, hey, pal, no fool with me. I know what I'm doing here. Hey, put up, shut up. You know what I'm talking about? Get my face. Get out of my face. I got this. You know, that kind of stuff. Okay, BB, you got it. So the guy says he's holding somebody. You say you're holding. I don't care what you say you're holding him. You have to run and find him. Go get him. I want to see some Christmas exchange. I know that may not mean a lot to you, but I would like to see it. Anybody with a brain who respects civilian life, human life, would say, cut the blasted deal. You get to be macho later. I'm reading his autobiography. It's got a lovely picture of muscle-bound BB and holding a gun in the back and looking about like he used to be Rock Hudson before Rock Hudson was found out. And then, but, you know, kind of a Hollywood idea. And he and his gun are smiling at you. And in the front, he has a map of Israel, and it doesn't include West. It does, well, there is no West Bank. There's no Gaza. And everybody says, I wonder what he wants. Well, he's got a map. It's pretty clear what he wants. And so we have to have you have to have an exchange. Now, the guy who could do this, of course, is Biden. And here's where the problem is. Biden is actually the boss. He's what his son calls the big guy. He's the big guy. In order for anything to happen, it has to be seen on the White House lawn or in the Oval Office with the big guy. That's where we are. There is no Russia. There was a quartet that was supposed to see that the peace agreements regarding statehood, dual two-state solution. That's under the legal guidance what's the word I want? It's under UN authority. It's called the Quartet. Russia's a leading member. The Quartet is nowhere, nowhere to be seen, nowhere. So what does that tell you that's important? It tells you that Washington is the most important player. And it's everything must go through them because they are number one. Any talk about anything has to have Washington's picture on it. This is not recognized. There is talk that Europe is getting a little restless. Frankly, the whole world, somebody called Tom Walker, the whole world is getting effing restless. And the whole world is not going to forget. As they say in legal circles, the whole world is seized on this subject. They're watching. So yeah, Big Joe is in charge. And don't anybody kid you. He's the guy. And all those people, some of them called Marxists, people write learned, long pieces about the decline and fall of the U.S. empire, and it's all done, it's all washed up. I agree with you. The problem is you can't get out of this current mess without going through Washington or walking right flat over them. That's your only choice. And Phil, I don't know if you noticed, but there is a kind of a burning bump developing on the Red Sea called Yemen.
I've noticed.
And you did notice.
I think the world is noticing.
The headline today was that the most important shipping company in Asia, Hong Kong, based in Hong Kong, says, we ain't going there no more. That's it. We're out. And those ships go to Israel. And it says, we're not going. Now, the U.S. is saying to Saudi Arabia, you guys were bombing Yemen. Would you please resume bombing? And Saudi Arabia says, we have this notice here just came this morning. It's from Yemen. It says, you can kiss your oil fields goodbye. You want to kiss them goodbye? Because you lay a hand on us, and that's the end of your oil field, big guy. And then so I assume Saudis are calling the Marines, and say, can you guys get in here and help us out? I'm not so sure that is likely. That's a heavy job. And so whether they're up to it or not, I don't know. But that's where the Red Sea crunch is developing. Now, maybe somebody wants it to develop as a kind of diversion war, where you say, okay, we got this going on, and we have the Gaza thing. Maybe we better shut Gaza down and go back to bombing Yemen, because we used to bomb Yemen every day, and nobody cared.
For years, right? I mean, it went 5-6 years.
Those were Arabs, too. Yeah. So who noticed? Even Tom Walkham didn't know they were doing that. He's trying to forget that. He forgot it. So anyhow, there we are. we're going to talk to Tony Leo here pretty soon. I don't know if I gave poor Riley a heads up, but I will. I promised to tell him. So we're going to call Tony Leo. But before we do, I want to say about the shooting of the hostages. I think that might mark a kind of moment because it military matters, something Americans do kind of understand military. They've been at war since anybody can remember. So, and your reputation, your military reputation, you have to be very protective of it. Your guys have to be better than the other guys. Your guys are smarter. Your guys are more capable. Your guys are more, and this will get you, humane. Those other people, they don't appreciate human life. Remember Vietnam, Phil?
Yes, they said that they were different because they were indifferent to whether they lived or died.
Yeah, Vietnamese didn't appreciate human lives. They just throw hordes at us. we dig a hole in the ground with and put a machine gun there, and they come at us, shows they don't appreciate human life because we killed them all. By the way, they had a principle. You remember this one, Phil? It's still alive, by the way. It's a military lore. Kill them all and let God sort them out. That was a saying.
That was certainly a saying.
So you're walking along through the dirt and rubble of Gaza, and three naked guys appear in front of you, holding a white flag, and they're yelling at you in Hebrew, "You're not a damn fool, you just kill them." How about that? Two of them they killed right flat out, and then one of them thought, "Wow," and he ran for it, and they pursued him and killed him. So I want to say there's something wrong with your morale, pal. You got a problem. And I haven't heard anybody say court-martial. I haven't heard anybody say they're under arrest. When they say, "Well, that's a violation," sounds, Colonel, sounds kind of serious. Those are Israelis. Those are Israeli soldiers. They were hostages. They were half-naked waving a flag. So now let us turn our attention to the families who said, "Please work on the release of our families." And we're told by these guys who now, you know, they're not satisfied to be Secretary of Defense. Now they got to put on their fatigues and their flak jackets and bluster in the microphone. They're not going to be food. They're not going to be water. They're not going to be fuel. And remember what God told us about Amalek. Kill him, kill his children, kill the mother, kill the suckling child. We remember. Oh, you do, do you? Wow. I said on the show, this is Taylor Report, when your commanding officers start to talk crazy, your troops will go insane. I swear, they will go out of their minds. If you can't control your mouth, your troops will go crazy. And when they hear that kind of talk, every civilian is a target. When a guy says, "Oh, they're using human shields," what he meant is he's going to kill the shield. That's all he meant. And then a guy says, "You know, our troops are really important, their lives, so we're not going to risk them unnecessarily in a situation where we can't tell civilians." I would say, "You're not running an army, my friend. You don't even know what you're talking about." He put on the uniform, he swore, and part of the game, I have to tell you about this, is it says you will make risks for your country, which means that you're going to have to look at a civilian and think, "That guy may be planning to kill me. That's too bad for you. Keep your eye on him, but you don't get to kill him." That's your homemade solution. Like the guy next door to us who was a World War II hero, he told me, "Phil, shoot first and ask questions later." And then there was another guy down the street who'd been in the Korean War. He said, "First you know, remember, you got to fire a warning shot and then you shoot to kill. Be sure to shoot to kill first, fire the warning shot second." That's what he told me. I thought about it. Fortunately, I was not in the situation where I had to make the decision. But I don't think it was good advice. So they have a problem. It's called a morale problem. When you behave like that, it spreads like a virus. And the nastiest guy in the platoon becomes the boss of the platoon. He really does. I recall the morbidity of the culture. And we had a sergeant named Deckler. Yeah, Sergeant Deckler. And I knew officers who prayed that he would walk by and salute them because it made him feel good. Because Deckler had killed a Mongolian, and we were all so proud of him. And he had, what we knew about him was that he had killed him and taken the body by the collar and spent the next 2 days dragging the body around. And people said, "Man, that Deckler's a tough bird." He became he had served in Korea. I wasn't with him. That was his reputation. Oh boy, did we admire Deckler. Did Decker speak to you? Yep. He's the guy who killed that Mongolian. Kept the body. By the way, there's a scene in Full Metal Jacket, very close to. Did you see the movie Full Metal?
I did, yes.
I advise good everybody, film. Watch yeah. Full Metal Jacket. It was the closest description to boot camp I ever saw. I watched it. As many ex-Marines, I watch all the movies. And the one that was most accurate was Full Metal Jacket. And one screw-up in the training where a heavy guy can't make it over the obstacle course, and two guys go and pick him up, and they continue. It wouldn't happen. When a guy falls down, you run in the obstacle course, and you go back, the sergeant says, leave him. To hell with him. Keep moving. You don't go back and help him up. That's just tough luck. And they teach you that. Actually, I learned that so well that I got complimented. They said, Taylor didn't care a damn about anybody. And they said, he must be paying attention. To go back, shooting your own men is a kind of a low point. And if I was a prime minister and had any self-respect, I'd quit. You remember, Phil, when people used to quit? They'd say, oh, man, this is a low point for me. And in my respect for my soldiers, we asked them to put their lives on the line, and this happened. Ronald Reagan, who was a non-combatant, liked to say, not on my watch. He loved to say that. He was never on watch. That's why he said it.
Yeah, we should remember that Lyndon Johnson quit, right? Lyndon Johnson quit. He said, I'm not going for another 4 years of this. He just walked.
I'm not what?
Lyndon Johnson. He said, I'm walking away from this. I'm not going to do this for another 4 years, right?
He didn't like getting out of a car and have a kid jump in his face and say, how many children did you kill today?
Yeah, that kind of
he said
helped.
That bothered him. Yeah. So for all of you out there who are protesting, learn a lesson. They actually see you. Richard Nixon pretended he didn't see them, and he saw them. He couldn't think about anything else. Those kids hate me. And they said, yes, sir, they do hate you. He once went and tried to, remember, had a conversation with him at the, that was weird, at the Washington Monument in the middle of the night. Somebody said, who's that? And it's Nixon. Walked up and tried to start a conversation. He was creeped out. This is still the Taylor Report, and it is CIUT, I think. Maybe we could play a little bit of our favorite John Jazz Man, or whatever. Actually, I'll play anything that Riley thinks is okay. And we'll come back, we'll talk to Tony Leah.
I got a letter from LBJ. It said, this is your lucky day. It's time to put your khaki trousers on. Though it may seem very queer, we've got no job to give you here, so we are sending you to Vietnam. Lyndon Johnson told the nation, have no fear of escalation. I am trying everyone to please. Though it isn't really war, we're sending 50,000 more to help save Vietnam from Vietnamese. I jumped off the old troop ship and sank in mud up to my hips. I cussed until the captain called me down. Never mind how hard it's raining, think of all the ground we're gaining, just don't take one step outside of town. Lyndon Johnson told the nation, have no fear of escalation, I am trying everyone to please. Though it isn't really war, we're sending 50,000 more to help save Vietnam from Vietnamese. Every night the local gentry slip out past the sleeping sentry. They go out to join the old VC. In their nightly little dramas, they put on their black pajamas and come lobbing mortar shells at me. But Lyndon Johnson told the nation, have no fear of escalation, I am trying everyone to please. Though it isn't really war, we're sending 50,000 more to help save Vietnam from Vietnamese. We'd go around in helicopters like a bunch of big grasshoppers searching for the Viet Cong.
Waist deep in the big money, and we're back. We're speculating about that's an LBJ song, Phil.
Yeah, yeah. I was one of the people who got to shout, "Hey, hey, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today?"
Yeah.
And I didn't know that he was listening, but I'm very pleased to know it now. You know?
Yeah, he was listening. Pete Seeger had a great song, Waist Deep in the Big Muddy. And he never got to be on television after that. This is Tater Report, CIUT, 89.5 FM. Phil's looking to be like he's going to, hoping for a wage increase. What is it?
Well, actually, I want a wage increase for CIUT. The fundraising drive is still on. We're still just a few pennies short of $100,000, and we need your support between now and December 31st. Go to the website. You know the drill by now. Okay. CIUT.FM. Donate.
Well, thank you. And I wanted to say here in the latter portion that I saw a guy, Pierre, yesterday on the television. Can't tell you the channel, but it was, if I saw it on television, it's one of four, I guess. And he said we should recognize the Palestinian state, the state of Palestine. He says we don't have to have some kind of a two-state meeting to do that. And then he said something that I had said on the Taylor Report before I became under the weather, and I thought maybe I was delusional, because he said what I said on the Taylor Report. He said more countries recognize the state of Palestine than recognize Israel. Why don't we just join the crowd? What he means by upgrade them, put them in the United Nations, get it over with. You can talk to other stuff about solve this, solve that. But we seem to be up against a strategy between Biden and Bibi of non-recognition called let's play and talk about it and forever, ever. And Tom Walkham will say we forgot. No, 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 no. Bull, that's over. Recognize them right now. Highest possible level contact agreement. Put them in the United Nations. Let them talk along with everybody else. And let's get this thing done. Now, do we have a minute or two? We have one. I want to tell you a Henry Kissinger story told to me by Gabriel Kokel, brilliant professor, retired from York University, many, many books. I was helping him move his books many years ago. Kokel's no longer with us. So I'm telling you this like it's the Netanyahu's by Joshua Cohen. So I said to him, I heard you knew Kissinger. And he said, yes. And he said, Kissinger, we knew him. We were post-World War II guys. And we were PhD guys together. And he said, so after he left our group, he said, nobody ever thought much of him, but he said, after he left our group, we look in the newspapers and he's famous. And he said, so we had a meeting and we said, well, what is it with Henry? This is, I'm telling you, Gabriel Kokel told me this. So he said, we had a meeting to discuss how did this happen, that he's now famous for what? And then he said, they, after the meeting concluded, they took a vote, they looked it up, they decided that shit floats. He said that,
that was an academic observation of Gabriel Kokel.
That's what it turned out he was on to something. Now, Noam Chomsky just said, by the way, if you look at his academic record, he said, we tried to use his American historiography, his little, what do you call them, the little papers you write. He said they were useless. Useless. You know, it's kind of important to remember when you got him all puffed up and he's floating in heaven. All right, this, we got to thank Riley because he gets us through all this stuff. We got to get out of here. What?
Riley thinks that Henry Kissinger's in hell and not heaven.
Oh, well, the votes are still out.
I mean, yeah.
The jury's still out on that one. I think Riley may have voted early. Okay, this is Taylor Report, and we've got great people coming up next. See you next week.
So long, Mom. I'm off to drop a bomb, so don't wait up for me. But while you swelter down there in your shelter, you can see me on your TV. While we're attacking frontally, watch Brinkley and Huntley describing contrapuntally the cities we have lost. No need for you to miss a minute of the agonizing Holocaust. Yeah! Little Johnny Jones, he was
was a U.S. pilot, and no shrinking violet was he. He was mighty proud when World War III was declared. He wasn't scared, no siree. And this is what he said on his way to Armageddon. So long, Mom, I'm off to drop the bomb, so don't wait up for me. But though I may roam, I'll come back to my home, although it may be a pile of debris. Remember, Mommy, I'm off to get a commie, so send me a salami and try to smile somehow. I'll look for you when the war is over, an hour and a half from now.